We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
The show today presented by MyBookie. You asked for it and they listened. MyBookie designed a unique deposit bonus that lets you cash in and cash out quickly. This is a unique deposit bonus for sports bettors who want to focus on what to bet and not a payout sweat. Make your first deposit today with my promo code, KevinDC. Wager your deposit amount once, and you're eligible right away to cash out. If you want a sports book that gives you the most for your money, bet on the big game with MyBookie. Pre-game, live line, Super Bowl prop bets, they've got everything. You can bet everything from the opening coin toss, the length of the national anthem, the length, Tommy, of the national anthem with a silent G, to the color of the Gatorade dumped on the winning coach. I can't tell you exactly who's going to win the Super Bowl, but I can tell you where I will be placing bets. MyBookie, bet anything, anytime, anywhere. MyBookie at MyBookie.ag. Again, use my promo code KevinDC. Tommy's with me, and we just spent 10 minutes before we started to record the podcast complaining about various ailments. You hurt your shoulder carrying your beach chair down to kind of relax for the day. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, look, this segment is also sponsored by AARP.
Well, I'm not there yet, but go ahead.
Okay. You know, I just got over a week of bursitis in my left knee, where I was pretty much laid up, but that cleared up. You know, they put me on the miracle drug steroids, and that cleared up, and I was 100% again. So I went swimming yesterday in the pool, and then after that, I took my beach chair down to the beach, and somehow, strapping my beach chair over my shoulder, I strained my right shoulder somehow, and I woke up this morning, and it hurt more. You know, and it's not a big thing. It's happened before. And it will clear up probably in a couple of days, but it's just a reminder of how fragile life is at this stage. You know, like my wife wanted to go bike riding with me, and I said people fall when they're riding bikes, and if you fall at that now, I mean, you know, God only knows what you're going to break. So, I mean, I limit myself to pretty much walking at this point. Well, and even that was dangerous because I got bursitis from that.
Well, that's why I wanted you to tell the story, because on Sunday morning I got up and it was early. And I've been doing this usually one of the two weekend days, either Saturday or Sunday morning. I'll get up at my normal time. I won't actually leave the house at my normal time. Because I don't think that's the healthy thing to do to leave the house at 4:45 a.m. when it's pitch dark on a weekend when I should be attempting to sleep in. But I just can't sleep in. Whatever. Not what I want to talk about. I have for, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks in a row gotten up and by about 5:30 left the house with the dog and gone on a very long walk. Basically like an 8 to 10 mile walk.
And that's a long walk.
That's a good walk. I mean, it ends up being it ends up being roughly like 18,000 steps on my Fitbit, something like that. When I get back, on Sunday morning, this past Sunday morning, my dog Lainey, my beautiful English bulldog, who, as I've mentioned before, is my favorite thing in my life right now. She kind of was limping a little bit when we got back from the walk a week ago, and, you know, it was too long of a walk. Bulldogs actually, for whatever reason, especially in heat, they shouldn't be out a long period of time in heat. And so I decided to just go on this walk by myself, and you know where I kind of live now, just into D.C., and I walked basically around Georgetown for, I don't know, 2 hours. And in Georgetown, on a Sunday morning that early, is so peaceful. It's so peaceful. And I went into Holy Trinity, which I think is one of the most, one of the prettiest churches in town, prettiest Catholic churches in town. Sat for a little bit. But other than that, it was just walking. But the reason I tell this story is that when I woke up yesterday morning, I was so sore I could barely walk. I could barely get out of bed.
Really?
From a long walk. That's ridiculous. But I think it's really in part because I'm not, I used to be so much more active. And you know what really destroyed that for me was the pandemic. When everybody decided, you know, to start eating and drinking a lot, others went the other way. I ended up putting on weight during the pandemic year. And what really hurt for me is the basketball that I would still play 2 days a week, which I still think is the best cardio workout you can get, an overall workout, even at you know, as you get up in age. It went away, and I have not gone back to it because a lot of the guys that were a little bit older sort of decided, you know, after, you know, a year and a half of not playing, it was going to be kind of too hard to get back into it. So, I mean, I do Peloton maybe 1 to 2 times a week. There was a period where I was doing it like 3 to 4 times a week, and that is a good workout. And then in the summer, you know, I was playing a lot of pickleball, but I injured myself. What are we doing here? Why are we doing these ailments? I just wanted to tell you that because of the conversation we were having, I went on a long walk and then I could barely walk the following day. That's sad. That's not a good state of affairs.
But you don't have to walk. Look, actually, I read a New York Times article that I've kept, and there's all kinds of opinions on stuff. But I've read this before. Once you get over 8,000 steps in terms of health benefits, you're not really helping yourself that much, unless you go extreme. You don't have to walk 8 to 10 miles a day to get the health benefits.
Well, I wouldn't have the time to walk 8 to 10 miles a day just on the weekend. Oh, I know what you're saying. Right. You're essentially saying the health benefits, basically, if you can get to 7,500 steps a day, you're good.
Yes.
And if you double that, there's the incremental benefit isn't really that much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I generally walk in Frederick a little over 3 miles. Probably closer to 4 when I'm down here, when I'm healthy, a day.
Yeah.
And I do band exercises, and that's it.
I mean, I have, you know, I do have a gym in my house, and I've got a treadmill, I've got a Peloton, and I've got weights. But, you know, the Peloton is by far and away, the Peloton bike I have is the most legitimate real workout I get now. Because I don't play basketball anymore. I'd like to figure out how to start doing it again, but I injured my back playing pickleball for, you know, last summer, and it's still not right. But anyway, whatever. Let's move on, because everybody...
Really? Is there anyone left?
Is there anybody
left out there?
Is anybody out there?
Hello? Hello?
Well, let's see if I'll tell you what. Let's see if we can really alienate and push away the 3 or 4 people that are remaining by talking about the Wizards. because I... I am telling you, Tom. All right. Let me dial it back. They've won six games in a row. They haven't won six games in a row in 8 years. 8 years it's been since they've won six games in a row. They hadn't beaten San Antonio in San Antonio since 1999. 22 years. As you know, I am still one of the people that pays attention to this team and watches them. I'd be totally embellishing if I said I sit there and I tune into every game start to finish every night. I would do that if they were really good, like they were, or if they were a good team, like they were a few years ago. Their six-game winning streak has included some wins over some horrible teams, including the team they played last night in the Spurs and the Rockets, and the Pelicans didn't have anybody. But I did mention to you the other day before you cut me off and said enough, is that they actually have some really good players. And when they are fully healthy, they're not terrible. Porzingis was back last night, and we ripped them for their draft choices when they traded Hachimura. But Denny Avdija is actually a pretty good player. He had a really good game last night. The more and more you watch Avdija, like from the jump, I think the first thing I said about him his rookie year is I'm like, this guy definitely is a guy that belongs. He acts like he belongs. I just don't know if he's going to develop into anything more than sort of a contributing player because he just doesn't have a lot of the offense that you need. And now he's developed that. He had 25 last night. He's really hard to guard from getting to the rim. He's high IQ, really high IQ player. Defends Porzingis, Beal, Kuzma. They've got a lot of contributing players that are good. I actually think that the Wizards are going to be in the postseason this year. And I don't know if that's the best thing for them from a franchise standpoint. Now, they could completely go the other way when the schedule gets tougher and they lose players, which they inevitably will do because they always do from injuries. But if they stay healthy, they're going to end up being a 500 or better team, and they're going to end up in a best of seven series in the Eastern Conference playoffs. That's the best I can do. They're also fun to watch because they're really good offensively. Now, I'll end the conversation there. Do you have any questions that you'd like to ask me about the Wizards or have any comments?
No, I would just urge everyone. This is my new, my additional Surgeon General's warning. Mm-hmm. Not as strong as the one for the football team, but still worthy of consideration. Please do not be satisfied out there with 45 wins.
Ooh. Well, I didn't say 45.
Be satisfied. Well, that would pretty much be close to a winning record.
Well, yeah, but I said 500 or maybe a little bit better. 41 and 41 would be 500. 45 wins from right. 24 and 26 would be quite the finish to the season. And if they
it's not from 21 and 46. It's from 1979. That's what it's from.
Well, they did win 49 in 2017.
So, yeah. I mean, that's my point. My point is, I mean, don't count the new glory years as where you basically get one or two games over 500 and you play in a playoff series. Please don't settle for that. Do not get excited for that.
No one is. Nobody is. I mean, people like me who actually follow the team and, if they're in a playoff series, trust me, if we get to April or we get to early May and they're in like a best of seven after winning, let's just say they only have to win one of the play-in games because they end up being the seven seed or whatever, the eight seed, and they're playing Brooklyn or Boston or Milwaukee in a best of seven, this is a team, unlike the Westbrook team, from a couple years ago, they got blew out by the 76ers. This is a team that I'd actually like to see in a best of seven. But to your point, they're not going anywhere in the Eastern Conference with this group that in terms of contending for anything meaningful. But they are one of the best 5 to 6, 7 teams in the Eastern Conference when they're healthy. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Do you have anything else?
Okay. No, I've got nothing. Look, I haven't watched them. I've read about them.
Mm-hmm.
I follow them. online, but I haven't watched them because I don't watch the NBA. It's all I can do to watch the NBA during the playoffs. Because the basketball stinks, you know? So, but I want to be able to discuss the Wizards at least from a distance, if not with any kind of personal firsthand knowledge. So I've been following them. I know that they beat San Antonio, and I know that they seemingly have a group of good core young players for the moment.
Yes, for the moment. That's true. And for the moment, they're healthy. And that's been an issue with basically all of their, you know, I think, impressive young players. They don't have a superstar, game-changer, top-five player. But Porzingis, healthy, is, you know, he's an impactful player for sure. But we'll see what happens. They play Detroit, who stinks, tomorrow night. That'll probably get them to seven straight and within a game of 500. And then they've got Portland, Brooklyn, Cleveland. They've got, you know, their next road trip includes Golden State. Here's what they've done in the last two or 2.5 weeks. They've gotten themselves back to close to 500. They've gotten themselves in position where they actually could be a winning record NBA team this year. But they've also done it, courtesy of kind of a weak schedule right now. I know you don't like the NBA, so I'm not going to really talk about the NBA. But I'm going to use the LeBron play from the Celtics game the other night. You saw that, right, where he got fouled and it wasn't called?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like King Kong being shot on the Empire State Building.
He's really amazing. He's really just such an actor.
And you know what was funny about this is he was right, but it was hard to be sympathetic to him because he was such a jerk about it.
Couldn't agree more. The LeBron conversation is a tough one because I do recognize, you know, for those of you that are young and believe he's the greatest player in the history of the game, and my boys believe that, I do recognize his greatness. I do. And look, he's going to pass Kareem here in the next couple of games, you know, and he's going to become the NBA's all-time leading scorer. And he's been much more than a scorer during his career. I get his greatness. And for me, you know, a couple of years ago, I finally, you know, elevated him into that Mount Rushmore category, certainly of the non-centers. But my God, is he just insufferable at times. That tantrum that he threw after that. By the way, I saw this stat because, you know, they've been complaining about not getting calls. Apparently, there have been 34 calls that were incorrect in Laker games this year in the final 2 minutes of close games. And 21 of the 34, I believe that would be more than half, have gone the Lakers' way. So it's not, you know, LeBron would have you believe and Patrick Beverley would have you believe that the league's out to get him. Let me just tell all of you conspiracy theorists when it comes to NFL rigged or NBA rigged.
Oh,
the NBA would if it's rigged, then trust me, LeBron's going to be in the finals this year. There's no chance that they would get a higher rating or more interest than if LeBron's in the finals. I mean, I used to say that about the LeBron-Kobe era. Like, if the NBA were truly rigged, and I watched the Tim Donaghy, you know, Netflix special. It was great. And he was involved in some shady stuff and some rigged games, for sure. But if the NBA truly was rigged, we would have seen Cleveland against Kobe, LeBron against Kobe, at least once. We never saw it one time. If the NFL were rigged, you don't think that Dallas would still be alive right now in the postseason? I mean, come on.
That's what frustrated me so much about the conversation on social media after the Cincinnati game.
Oh.
Was the idea that the first move that people would think is that there's some kind of conspiracy, and these brilliant conspiracists have put together this whole network that manages to screw the Bengals and then keep quiet about it for the rest of their fucking lives.
Right. Well, yeah, well, look, in the NBA, the Tim Donaghy story was a real story. And you know what? They couldn't keep quiet.
But that was more about insider information. That was insider information. That wasn't necessarily...
That was him.
That was a referee.
That was him fixing
some
games.
That was a referee.
Yeah.
No, that was a referee who knew what the league wanted them to concentrate on certain nights and bet accordingly.
Right.
That was insider information as much as anything. But this whole thing is just... I mean, you know, look, my go-to move is the head of the CIA, what was his name, General Petraeus?
Yeah.
He had an affair, and he couldn't keep it quiet. Jesus Christ!
Do you
know how many people have to shut up to keep a conspiracy quiet?
So what I wanted, the reason I brought up the LeBron thing, and then you went to Cincinnati, Kansas City, which I was going to do as well, is I think there's a conversation about, is it worse officiating, A? B, if you think it is, what can be done about it? Because my view, and then I'll let you respond, my view is, as long as there's been the human element in officiating, we have been complaining about officiating for years. For years. I mean, there's been controversial finishes and teams that were screwed and bad calls by human beings, and I personally don't think it's worse. In fact, I think it's probably better because of all the attention on refereeing. Secondly, outside of, like, you know, maybe on the LeBron call, maybe replay being extended to non-calls, you know, in the final 30 seconds of a game or the final minute of a game where they could go over and correct that, I just don't think there are any big fixes.
You know, I think they've got a perception problem. You may be right. My impression was watching the official who was
Ron Torbert
making the calls. Okay. He looked like he was past it, Kevin. And this is from an old guy, okay? I mean, I think that the NFL needs to put out the best crew they possibly can in these games. And that includes a number of factors. And far be it from me to be age discriminatory, but he looked like he was past it, okay? I do think that it's benevolent on the NFL to basically reevaluate their officiating every year with the goal of, in the playoff games, not rewarding referees, but putting the best possible crew that they can out there.
Well, they do.
And I'm not sure they do that the way they do with their system.
Well, you know, in these playoff games, they don't take the crew as it was, you know, constituted during the regular season. They do what they believe to be is an all-star crew. So Torbert's working with different referees on his particular team. But I want to go back to what you said at the beginning. The league has a perception problem. Is it hurting the league? I don't think it is. I mean, the AFC Championship game just drew 53 million viewers. It was the second most watched television show of the last year, Super Bowl being the number one. The ratings don't go down. They keep going up. The interest keeps going up. I would ask you, I'm not debating as to whether or not they have a perception problem, and maybe perception doesn't match actual reality, but what is the perception problem doing to them? How is it hurting them?
You're right, but you could say that about the NFL, about anything. All the warts that the NFL has, you know, they're certainly not lethal in any way, shape, or form. But you operated a business. Is that the best way to operate? Hey, we've got all these problems, but as long as it's not hurting us, we can just ignore them.
I think that that they should push back if perception isn't reality. And I think you could literally put something out there that suggests that officiating and the efficiency of officiating and the accuracy of officiating has actually improved. Because I bet if there was any kind of legitimate study done on it, I think that's what you would find. I think you'd find that actually that officiating has improved over the years from where it used to be.
Well, I think replay has improved officiating. I know that's sacrilege to say, but I think it has.
I think the big issue with perception being a problem is that it's no longer impacting just people with major rooting interests. It's impacting, you know, people who have bet, so many more people who have bet on these games. And, you know, you combine the legalized betting with social media, and I think you're right. I think the perception that the officiating is much worse and it's the worst it's ever been is kind of, you know, it's magnified by all of that. And not as many people would be as moved by it 10 years ago. But I bet that the officiating with replay and everything else is better. Tommy, I'm going to do this. I should have done it with you today, but we're not going to have time today. Maybe we can do it on Thursday. But Super Bowl 17's 40-year anniversary was yesterday, the Riggins 4th-and-1 run. And there's a play at the end of the game, and it's a play that I didn't remember until I watched the game. But basically, Riggins on the drive after the touchdown run fumbled, and he was called down. And Merlin Olsen, who was doing the game, actually says, that actually is a fumble, but they didn't have replay. And Miami would have gotten possession of the ball down 20-17 with a chance to tie the score in Super Bowl 17. Nobody really remembers that. Riggins, you know, is the all-time clutch performer, I think, in the history of this town when it comes to professional, you know, athletes and what he did in that postseason. And by the way, what he did the following year in the postseason as well. But I do you remember? I mean, for me, the Mel Gray catch. You know, if you go back and watch the Mel Gray catch in 1975 against the Redskins in a game that they called it a catch and Washington ended up losing a playoff berth because of it, it's such an obvious play, it would have immediately from New York been, no, incomplete pass. There was a touchdown that was called out of bounds in the Oilers' Bum Phillips days, Earl Campbell days at Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game that was a terrible call. There have been so many of those calls over the years. I actually think in many ways, just like the New Orleans Rams NFC title game when they missed the egregious interference call, I actually think it adds to the lore of the NFL, these controversies. I don't think it hurts it.
I think we can't say because of the legalized gambling, how that will play out in the future. I think that changes the equation a little bit. Look, you know, sports books, and tell me if I'm wrong, will go out of their way if they see any little red flag.
Oh, yeah.
To basically, I think the NFL needs to operate that way when it comes to perception. I really do. I mean, again, it doesn't seem to be hurting them. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do everything you can to change it.
I know, but what are the changes? Like, I think you brought up something.
I don't know.
I don't think that, I'm sure there are people that are much more sort of into the refereeing crews in the NFL than I am.
Yes.
I'm not an expert on that. Like, Zabe is obsessed with that. So I would refer you to Zabe when it comes to the ranking of, you know, officiating crews, whether it's Hockley or Torbert or whomever. But I do think that the crew you work with all season long, that the crews should be ranked and they should get the playoff games and you shouldn't mix and match. To me, that creates kind of a learning curve of working with the people you're working with that may impact something. Look, the worst play of the weekend for me wasn't any of the, you know, missed calls on blocks. Like, I think that punt return, everybody's so convinced that was a block in the back. I think that's a very, very 50-50-ish kind of call. I think the same thing on the roughing the passer on Burrow. I think the same thing on the hold that everybody's convinced was an absolute hold. You could call holding on every play. But the do-over on that 3rd-and-9 when the back judge was trying to whistle the play dead, they got to fix something like that. Because I'll tell you why, Tommy. That, to me, is more What would be the word to describe something like that versus a call that's missed or a call that's bad? That's like an administrative thing. And because they weren't used to working together, I'm not sure that that had anything to do with it. But administratively, if you're trying to whistle a play dead, but nobody notices that you've whistled the play dead and you let that play ultimately continue and you're not blowing that whistle as loud as you can with other referees blowing their whistles and jumping in the middle of the play to stop the play. I mean, you had the punt team and the punt return team out there. They played that play. Nobody hesitated on that play. It didn't appear. You've got to handle that particular situation. Having a do-over on a big third and nine was ridiculous.
Well, that speaks to the perception, because the play ultimately meant nothing.
You're right, because they didn't score on the drive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the play that everybody, a lot of people are hanging their hat on. They can't even, I mean, they let plays happen that should have been stopped. So you're right. That speaks to perception right there. I just think that they need to be diligent about their officiating every year. I think a little bit more than they do. You know, these guys employ full-time referees now, right?
Yes.
I don't know if all of them are. Are all of them full-time?
It's a good question.
I don't know.
I thought that they now...
I
don't think all of them are. I think you're right. I don't think all of them are. By the way, what do referees earn?
That was good. I don't know. That was going to fix everything, and that didn't, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's laughable that people think that the game was fixed.
Well, NFL
is absolutely
NFL rigged laughable. Was like a hashtag going all day Sunday, and I just laugh at that because it's. If it were really rigged, the truth is, any matchup in the Super Bowl is going to be watched by 100+ million people. Okay, so I understand that. But if the league were really rigged, you don't think they'd like to see the Cowboys playing this past weekend? You don't think that the Buffalo, like, going into this postseason, what would have been the dream rigged matchup for the NFL? Buffalo, DeMar Hamlin versus the Cowboys. And if not, get Tom Brady in there again somehow with the Bucks. I think.
Yeah.
I mean.
But you look at the players believe it. There were 49er players who were quoted saying that once Brock Purdy went down, it was like the league called the officials and said, make sure the 49ers don't get in the Super Bowl.
Well, they had no chance of making the Super Bowl when Josh Johnson went out. The chances for a half that they could even, you know, I think what did Cooley say yesterday, that they couldn't have beaten that the 49ers would have gotten routed by the Texans with what they put out there in the second half. I think that they would have been in trouble against Georgia in the second half of that game. They had zero chance, obviously, of competing once Josh Johnson went out. They didn't have a quarterback that could throw a forward pass, by the way, which leads me to this. Because I do want to get your overall thoughts on the games on Sunday. And I wanted to get to a couple of other things as well. But, you know, Brock Purdy, as it turns out, has, it looks like, a very serious injury. You know, he's got that elbow, that serious elbow injury that could take, it's that UCL, could take 6 months to repair. Is this the thing that Strasburg has right now?
No. That's something else. It's the thing that Harper has.
Oh, that's right. It's the thing that Harper has, exactly. And so a lot of people were upset that I got a couple tweets. Your boy Kyle had Purdy out there. The Shanahans did it again. They put a quarterback in jeopardy. Well, they didn't really put him in jeopardy because they didn't ask him to throw the football. They just asked him to hand the ball off with what he couldn't throw the football. Obviously, he couldn't throw the football, so they had conceded on the game. And I did, for those of you that missed Cooley yesterday, Cooley, like, I thought that one of the criticisms of Kyle Shanahan could have been that he should have just gone with McCaffrey and gone 11 on 11 in the run game. But Cooley made a really good point. He said McCaffrey doesn't know the checks, the run checks. He hasn't been in the quarterback meeting room. If you're not going to throw the football with, you know, Purdy at least can check them based on the defense into a better running play, which is probably the reason he was out there, which I think makes sense. But no, I don't think Kyle Shanahan put Brock Purdy in harm's way. He didn't ask him to actually drop back and throw a pass. I think he threw two quick screens and that was it.
Right. But I tell you what else he didn't do. It wasn't Kyle's finest moment.
How so?
I mean, that's a moment, no matter what Cooley said, that's a moment where the coach really needs to step up and come up with a system to at least try to compete. And going 10 on 11 is not competing. You've got to figure out a better system than that. Instead, all he did was scream and rant and lose his composure on the sideline like his team did. It was a total meltdown by the 49ers and their coach.
Man, I agree with you. There was major frustration. And by the way, just so we're clear, because I can hear the people saying, oh, here comes the Shanahan defense from Sheehan. I bet Philadelphia and I picked Philadelphia and I was rooting for Philadelphia in this game. And when Brock Purdy went out and Josh Johnson came in, I felt really good about my bet and I wanted Philly to hammer the 49ers. Okay, but
look, I think Kyle Shanahan is a great coach.
Oh.
But this was not his greatest day.
But
I mean, this is the kind of moment, Kevin, that I know this is kind of abstract bullshit, but this is the kind of moment where you're John Belushi, you gather the brothers around, and you say, this could be our finest moment. Instead, it was the opposite.
I'm not saying that you're saying this, but I'm going to try to use what you said about Carson Wentz. Anybody that thinks that it was a good idea to start Carson Wentz should be at the head of the dope school line or whatever your line was. Anybody that thinks that Kyle Shanahan was instrumental in the 49ers losing to the Eagles, and I got a lot of, there your boy, Shanahan, can't win the big one, can't get to the Super Bowl and win it. Anybody that literally thinks that Kyle Shanahan had anything to do with the loss to the Eagles should be at the head of the dope class. Because you cannot win a football game without a quarterback in the NFL. That's why they lost the game. I think they would have, and I said this yesterday, I really believe that if Brock Purdy, after watching San Francisco's defense against Philadelphia's offense in the first half, I think if Brock Purdy doesn't get hurt, the 49ers are in the Super Bowl. And I picked Philadelphia, and I bet on Philadelphia, even though I, you know, didn't have a great feel for the game one way or the other. But I think that they would be in the Super Bowl with Brock Purdy. And I'll go a step further. When McCaffrey scored on that drive to make it 7-7 with Josh Johnson, we were still, if Josh Johnson stays in the game, we're still in for a relatively competitive game. I don't think they would have won the game. Philadelphia would have won the game, but it would have been a competitive game. But if anybody puts that loss on Kyle Shanahan, teacher dope in the dope class, because that's the dumbest take I've ever heard. Dumbest. Now, if you want to say that his team lost its cool and it got frustrated and they could have, you know, that's different. They had no chance of winning the game.
I know that.
After
I'm
they
not
lost.
Saying they had
okay.
a chance to
okay.
win.
All right.
I'm not saying they had
I know.
A chance
I'm not
to
saying
win.
That you said that.
I'm just saying he did not. He wasn't. He lost his composure and his team lost his composure too. And, you know, you can't afford to do that. I think the Eagles would have won anyway. I think that the Eagles were winning the battle on the line of scrimmage, particularly as the game went on. It was stunning how they manhandled the 49ers on the offensive line. I mean, the 49ers defensive front.
Yeah, but that was so that was when the game won. That was when the game was over. I mean, if you the beginning of that game, the 49ers defensively were awesome. I mean, and that's why
but I think the Eagles. I think the Eagles would have worn them down.
I think the Eagles. The underrated portion of that game really is how good the Eagles were defensively. But it was pretty easy to be really good defensively against a team with Josh Johnson for a quarter and no quarterback for a half. So it's really hard to give them that much credit. But if the early portion of that game. From you know the fumble where they forced it was three and out, four and out, three and out, and the 49ers were a wrecking crew. And the truth is that Kyle, the game changing play in that game, there were two of them, is not challenging the Devontae Smith drop on the fourth and three,
right?
Which again, I'm not sure why New York didn't jump in. We've seen New York jump in all season long and immediately tell the referees that's an incomplete pass. We've seen that, and it's a championship game. So what else are they doing? They're not watching 15 games at once. But you know, and they're you know, I think when Devontae Smith jumped up and started signaling, "Hey, let's hurry up, hurry up, hurry up," and Hufanga, their safety, kind of said no, that Kyle should have challenged the play. And then I thought, and then I thought the other key portion was. The Josh Johnson drop of the perfect snap fumble at the end of the half, it would have been 14-7. They would have had a chance in the second half, even with Josh Johnson with the defense playing really well. But look, bottom line
is... you're going to have a quarterback who doesn't play, you're going to have snaps drop like that. That's going to happen. And what do you expect?
Well, I don't expect a veteran quarterback like Josh Johnson to just drop, you know, in his hands a perfect snap. And then, by the way, not being able to fall on the ball right at his feet. I don't know how much practice you need for that. You know, the funny thing about Josh Johnson is he's the guy that in Jay Gruden's final season here in 2018, when, you know, they were losing quarterbacks left and right, Alex Smith, your boy Colt McCoy, and then it was Sanchez, and then Josh Johnson came in, played really well when they beat Jacksonville, and played a really good game against Tennessee when they were actually still mathematically alive. But that was I've told Jay before, I think that may have been the best stretch of coaching he's ever done. He had nothing at quarterback, and that team was competitive down the stretch. But anyway, whatever. It sounds like we've done the 49er-Eagle reaction for you. Let's do the Kansas City-Cincinnati reaction. And I want to talk about Washington's offseason quarterback path. We'll get to those things right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. Go to windownation.com/homeshow You'll get all of the Window Nation Home Show savings, which includes 5 years interest-free. Also, you will pay half price on those windows. Buy two, get two free with no limit. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com/homeshow. Mention my name. You'll get a free estimate. The Senior Bowl in Mobile is this coming weekend. It's Senior Bowl week down in Mobile. Ben Standig will join me all week long on the radio show, so you can tune in for that. Ron Rivera is not there. He is somewhere else, actually, and we'll share that with you here momentarily. But before we get to that, Chiefs-Bengals, you haven't had a chance to weigh in on that game. What'd you think?
Well, I think you saw, and no one can predict what's going to happen. I mean, you know, things come up, but that's going to be a hell of a rivalry, Mahomes and Joe Burrow, for years to come. And what I saw was a quarterback who plays the position better than anyone I've ever seen play the position. I mean, Mahomes is just unbelievable. I mean, imagine playing for him. Imagine what the players feel like. I mean, you know, I remember Ernie Accorsi talking about the value of a quarterback, the former Giants GM.
The bus line.
Yeah. And he gets on, they look at him and they say, well, we got a chance with this guy. I mean, that's the ultimate with Mahomes. Everybody on that Kansas City team must feel like they're going to win every game because they've got him.
He's so good. He is so good.
I mean, he is so creative and so quick.
I mean, and he wasn't even quick the other day.
Flawless. I know.
Yeah, I can't believe how good he is. I think he's, well, I said this recently, and I forget it if you and I had this conversation together. I can't think of a player that's ever been a lock Hall of Famer faster than Patrick Mahomes. You may tell me Unitas or Gale Sayers or somebody like that. If he never took another snap in the NFL, he's in the Hall of Fame first ballot. It's not even close.
I agree. I agree.
And
I've never had anyone basically take my breath away in terms of the conversation of the greatest quarterback of all time. It took Brady 6 Super Bowls for me to get to that point, okay, in terms of accomplishments. But the greatest quarterback I've ever seen plays for the Kansas City Chiefs right now.
Wow. Wow. Think about that, boys and girls. All right? Old man Tom just said Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback he's ever watched. I can't tell you how many times that if somebody made a statement like that, he would start with laughing and then just, these people today, they didn't see Unitas. They didn't see Otto Graham. I mean, you would have had the list, Bart Starr, the whole thing. I can't put him in, because I think that accomplishment, you know, goes up there too. So Brady is still number one for me. But I would be very surprised if Patrick Mahomes plays another 3 years or 4. And at that point, I'm not willing to say he's the greatest of all time. Because at that point, a lot of the accomplishment will be there with it. I do think that Mahomes and Rodgers, in my lifetime of watching quarterbacks, and I would put Elway and Marino into that conversation, are the most gifted quarterbacks that I've ever watched. Like, Brady and Manning are different than Rodgers and Mahomes and Elway, and even Marino to a certain degree. And I know Marino, from a mobility standpoint, is more like Brady and Manning, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody throw the football like Marino from the pocket, with the quick release, with the accuracy, with the velocity. I mean, I still, when people tell me that Dan Marino's not in their top 10, I do the Tommy laugh and just say, please, just stop. You're now, you can't be in this conversation anymore. It's a big boy conversation. Because Dan Marino threw for 5,000 yards before basically anybody other than Dan Fouts was throwing for 4,000. And I just, I Marino's one of my all-time favorites. And Elway was my number one of all time because Elway is like Mahomes and like Rodgers, you know, well in advance of Mahomes and Rodgers. But Mahomes is the most creative. He is – what he did the other day really added to his legacy, too, because he was
– Yes.
He was, you know, if Cooley called it 60% of Mahomes. Whatever it was, it wasn't the Patrick Mahomes that we're used to seeing, and he did it from the pocket. And the throw that he had to Valdes-Scantling on the 3rd and 10 that gave him the 20-13 lead, where he basically ducked pressure, kept anybody from hitting that ankle, and still threw it off basically one ankle on a dime with incredible velocity, is one of the better throws you'll see all year. He was brilliant on Sunday. They had no chance. He carried the team on one ankle to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
So did you thought that that was roughing the passer at the end, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did. I thought it was a foolish look. I'm not a believer in one play costs the team a game. There's lots of moments in a game where it can turn. But it was an inopportune moment for them. And, yes, it was roughing the pass. It would have been called under any circumstances, I think.
I think, you know, the one thing that I'm glad to see, I'm assuming that this hasn't happened because I haven't read about it in yet when New Orleans lost that NFC title game to the Rams, and people forget that New Orleans actually won the toss and had the ball to begin overtime, and they lost the game when Breeze threw the interception in overtime. But remember how the, you know, basically the fans and the city and everybody was suing everybody. They wanted to sue everybody for losing that game. I have not gotten that from Cincinnati, which is nice. And even the mayor from Cincinnati, who was called out by everybody, including Travis Kelce calling him a jabroni, he had a pretty self-deprecating.
That was great, by the way.
He had a pretty self-deprecating tweet. The mayor did.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't calling for lawsuits against the NFL like the Saints fans were and the New Orleans, you know, political people were after that loss, but. Yeah, that was roughing the passer. I mean, that's called 95. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people reached out to me and said, Sheehan, 95% of the time, that's 100 out of 100 that gets called. Once
yeah.
the arm got extended, yeah. whether he flailed or not was immaterial. You know, that flag was coming out, and I tend to agree. So do you have a first thought on the Super Bowl? Philadelphia at my bookie right now, -2.
I like the Eagles. I think the Eagles will wear down any opponent they face, and they're like the fighter who wins the championship rounds. You know, the last four rounds of a fight. I think the Eagles are like that because of the way they play so physically. I think they'll keep it close, and I think they'll wear down their opponent. In this case, the Chiefs. And I think, when you saw that Jalen Hurts sustained drive where he ran the ball, what, 5 or 6 times in a row?
Yeah.
I think that's symbolic of what they can do near the end of a game.
The funny thing is I said this to Chris yesterday, because I love Jalen Hurts, and I've been a fan of Jalen Hurts, and I thought that he could, you know, turn into a really good quarterback. I thought it was so unnecessary. The game was over, and he's not 100%. And he took some shots running the football there at the end. He's a badass, and apparently, you know, he is the leader of all leaders. You know, Merrill Reese I've had many times on the radio show, you know, at least twice a year typically before the Washington games, the longtime legendary play-by-play voice for the Eagles radio network. And he's been telling me, and he told me last year, and he told me before this year, he said, Jalen's the absolute most respected person in that building. He is a total leader. That's one of the things about Jalen Hurts. I just remember when he got benched, you know, for Tua in that championship game, and then the following year he got a chance to come in the SEC title game, and he never bitched, and he was always ready. I just always loved Jalen Hurts as a college player. But with that said, I don't think he should have run as much on that drive. But after what we were just talking about with respect to Patrick Mahomes, that's why I'm going Kansas City. I just think that, you know, another 2 weeks for him to get healthier, hopefully. I think they need to have some of those receivers back because he was without receivers, too, in that game. Yeah. But I'm going to go with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Or I'm just going to go with Patrick Mahomes and believing in ultimately the importance of the position, the greatness in Mahomes, and somehow they get it done. I'm actually surprised they're an underdog. And they didn't open up as an underdog. They opened up as a slight favorite in most places, you know, pick them in most places. I'm surprised that a lot of the money is on Philadelphia here early in the Super Bowl, you know, lead up. I'm surprised at that. All right, so I saw our good friend Chris Russell retweet a Junkies tweet with Ron Rivera playing golf out at Pebble Beach. That's where the tour is this week. They're in Pebble this week, and then next week they're out in Scottsdale for the waste management as the Super Bowl's out in Scottsdale. When you get the Super Bowl and the waste management in the same week out in Arizona, going to be some late nights. I've done it twice.
Yes.
All right, so there's a picture of Ron Rivera playing at Pebble Beach, playing golf at Pebble Beach. And the Junkies tweeted out the picture earlier this morning. Are you okay with Commanders coach Ron Rivera playing golf at Pebble Beach this week when he still hasn't hired an offensive coordinator? And then our good friend, Chris Russell, retweeted it and said, no offensive coordinator, the Senior Bowl going on, not a good look in any way. Sorry, but that's the truth. And, of course, right now Russell is talking about it on his show with Pete Medhurst on our station, 980. I don't have a problem with Ron Rivera playing golf at Pebble Beach today and probably the Pro-Am this week. I don't have a problem with it at all. First of all, I don't even know that he'll be the coach here by the time we get to the end of March. But, you know, even if this were a normal situation, I don't have a problem with it. He can interview these offensive coordinator candidates by Zoom. He can interview them at Pebble Beach. He can interview them last week back at the office and this week back at the office a little bit later on in the week when he's back after maybe a 2-day or 3-day trip to Pebble Beach. I don't have a problem with this at all. Do you?
No, I have no problem with this. Look, Ken Sampisi ain't going anywhere, okay?
Pat Shermer's not going to get hired by anybody else.
Right, right. So these guys, they're not going anywhere. And the so-called big swing that they want to take with Eric Bieniemy, I mean, that would just ludicrous, you know, that he would come to take a job with a franchise where a new coach may exist in a month or two, or within a year, and run an offense the exact opposite of what they run in Kansas City. You know, imagine calling plays for, and if he does, call plays for Patrick Mahomes, and then calling plays for Sam Howell in the run first offense of the Washington.
Well, he doesn't
Commanders.
Call plays. That's part of the problem, is
that's
that he
true.
Doesn't call plays.
Yeah,
that's why a lateral move for Bieniemy kind of makes sense. He's got to get, you know, out of the shadow of Andy Reid.
But this is the wrong place to do that.
Well, it's always the wrong place, you know, to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it is always the wrong place. So, no, I don't have a problem with it. This is an ultimate lame duck situation for everyone involved, you know. They're going to be lucky they get a body to fill the role. And, you know, if they're not going to dig up George Halas from his grave to be the offensive coordinator, then it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, he didn't go to the Senior Bowl last year either, just if my memory serves me correctly. I'm pretty sure I'm right on that because I think Ben told me that this morning, or maybe yesterday we talked about that with Ben on the podcast. I mean, that's a scout's trip. And I know Ron is coach-centric Ron. Okay, he's the head of the football operation, but he didn't go to it last year. You know, he was busy looking at Carson Wentz film. But this is like kind of ridiculous to me. Like a couple of days out in Pebble Beach, if he weren't a lame duck, if we were talking about year two of a 5-year deal, I just don't think that this is. I think this is overdone. Here's the thing that I think is going to be interesting, and I mentioned this to Ben yesterday. I think that the Eric Bieniemy stuff and the Anthony Lynn stuff, if they're able to hire one of those people, and they pull it off, and they have to commit, you know, just say a 2-year deal for, you know, $2 million a year, something like that. That's what some of these good OCs, they're $2 to $3 million a year. I don't think Scott Turner was at that. I think it's going to be really interesting to then react to, okay, the owner's okay with making those kinds of decisions. What does that mean with respect to the sale? Now, that's not a big investment. Yeah. You know, that's not a Lamar Jackson investment. They're not going to make that. They're not going to make probably even a Derek Carr kind of commitment. But I think that the more interesting is the flip side to that. What if, and I said to Ben, what if we get an announcement here shortly that Ken Zampezi has been given the interim offensive coordinator job? And I just thought of that because I thought, if this Rex Ryan stuff, which came from Diana Russini's tweet last week and a Colin Cowherd segment on it, and I know you want to talk about this. And for those that missed it, I'll play it here for a moment. But I just thought, if you end up on the offensive coordinator spot getting, like, Ken Zampezi is going to be our interim offensive coordinator, that pretty much tells you, I think, that there is a major spending freeze, that this thing's going to get done quickly, as in the next few months, which Jay Glazer reported over the weekend, that the ownership thing's going to be taken care of by the end of March, and that the new ownership's coming in and cleaning house the moment they get in. I mean, they're basically going to clean house, and they've got some people maybe lined up. Who knows, maybe Sean Payton. Now, I know you want to weigh in on the Rex Ryan stuff, but real quickly, like, don't you think that that would be a major tell if Zampezi was given the job, or even worse, given the job with an interim tag?
I don't think you need to give him an interim tag. He's already working for you.
Yeah, but you got to elevate him to the OC position and give him the pay that corresponds to that job.
I know. I don't think, if they hire him, period, as offensive coordinator, I think that's a reasonable conclusion that it's a bookkeeping move, that things are going to change dramatically real soon. So, I agree with you.
All right, let's play the Rex Ryan thing. I played it yesterday. We talked about it with Ben yesterday, but I want your reaction. This was Rex Ryan Sunday on the pregame show on ESPN suggesting that Washington is the potential landing spot for not only Sean Payton, but Tom Brady as well.
Randy, this is why I say it could happen. There's a strong possibility that there's going to be a change in ownership, all right? And when that happens, these owners aren't tied in to that coach. And to me, I can see a Sean Payton, Tom Brady. We talk about Miami. Well, it wasn't just the Miami contact and Brady. It was the Sean Payton. It was going to be that marriage of those two. So I could possibly see that down the road. I mean, if he doesn't sign with the Raiders immediately, I could see this as a possibility.
Before, Tommy, you give me your reaction, just for those that missed the show yesterday. There was some context for this. I mean, it could have been just Rex Ryan having a source or just giving some thoughts to this. But Diana Russini sent out a tweet last week that was kind of cryptic. It was in a quote tweet form of a guy out of New Orleans that was updating everybody on Sean Payton and where he was interviewing. And Diana, who was in this market for a while and broke a lot of stories, wrote, "I was told there's also a team waiting in the wings watching all of this and could make a move if they get their ducks in a row." Colin Cowherd took that on Fox and said Diana Russini has ties to D.C. Washington is the sleeper market for Sean Payton to land in when they get the new ownership. And the only reason that Colin Cowherd's comments might be significant is he had Sean Payton on his show every single week this year as a contributor to the Cowherd show. As part of the overall Fox commitment that Sean Payton had this year. So go ahead. What were your thoughts on this?
Well, I thought that was pretty interesting. I think it's indicative of what you said. I think they're, and what Jay Glazer reported, this is going to happen quick. It will happen quick enough for them to make dramatic changes. I mean, unless there's some kind of snafu, and when you're dealing with a major business deal like this, there's always the possibility that something could come up at the last minute to screw it up. But, I mean, if this happens, you know, by the March owners' meetings, yeah, you can pull this off. You can clean your house. You can start over. You can bring in the big guns like a Sean Payton, and if you really want a Tom Brady. So I think I think the idea of Sean Payton coming here to coach, if I was a prospective owner, I would have already talked to Sean Payton and had discussions with him about being my coach. That doesn't mean that would be my final decision, but I would have had multiple conversations with Sean Payton at this point if I was bidding for the Washington football team.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think what you just said is true. Like if any of us were in the position of being one of the bidders and potentially being one of the front runners, you would be talking, you'd be planning, like, okay, what are we going to do when we get this team? You know, because it's stale right now. We need some life, and by the way, we need an overall better football situation. Okay, Ron Rivera is a respected guy, and, you know, the people that they have in the building are more respected than they were before, but we're bringing in our own team. You know, Tom Landry was cut loose when Jerry Jones had Jimmy Johnson sitting there waiting to come in and take over the Cowboys when he bought the team from Tex Schramm and company. If it's a Josh Harris or a Bezos or a Feliciano or whatever, the California group, and they've reached, and who knows what their relationship might already be with Sean Payton. They might know him, or they may know somebody close to Sean Payton, and maybe they've said, this thing's going to get resolved, it's going to happen quickly, and I'm going to clean house, and I want you to be my coach, and I want also Tom Brady, you know, or the quarterback of your choice. Hopefully the owners, I want the owner that says to the coach, who do you think the quarterback should be? So the Tom Brady,
absolutely.
Yeah, because to me, Sean Payton made it very clear that during the season in an interview when he said, I'll go back to coaching, but only in the ideal situation when it comes to ownership and stability in an organization, which means Washington would have never, ever been a possibility for Sean Payton had the Snyders continued to own the team. But I didn't discount this completely with Ben yesterday. I still think it's a long shot because of something that Sean Payton said, which was he thinks a lot of these coaching things are going to be resolved during the week in between the championship games and the Super Bowl. And maybe he was referring to himself, maybe he was referring to others. But we are, by the way, I think, going to be later than typical with a lot of these coaching decisions being made. Usually they're made pretty quickly. Ron Rivera, remember, was hired on the day after Thanksgiving, Tommy, if you recall, back in 2020. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. But it was the day after New Year's. The owner at the time was confused with which day it was.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, seriously, you want to get Sean Payton, the Tom Brady thing, I think would be really interesting. Sean Payton and Aaron Rodgers would be the dream for me. And then drop Commanders and go to Washington.
Yeah.
And now we've got something to get, you know, interested in again with the new owner.
Absolutely.
Who I would prefer be somebody less high profile than Jeff Bezos. I don't know anything about these owners, so I really can't say with any certainty who would be a better owner than the other. Josh Harris has owned sports teams before. He owns the New Jersey Devils. They're having a really good season. He owns the Philadelphia 76ers. And a lot of good things by media members and critics in those respective sports have said that he's a pretty good owner. You know, and he's also a hands-off.
You want an owner, I think, who recognizes there's need for dramatic change immediately. That you've got a sick patient on life support, and you need to bring the paddles in right now with a dramatic move.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say something that would have been, I think, distasteful. But you absolutely need the defib machines immediately to the patient.
Yes.
And look, the bottom line is, you know, that first shock is going to get the patient breathing again, and that is that Dan's gone. Immediately, the patient now has survived and is alive again. And now getting them really interested in terms of buying tickets. And, you know, I think there are a lot of other things that have to happen. I think they've got to do away with, you know, Corporal Tutty and the name of the team, the 2222 brand. I think a lot of that stuff, the Will Misselbrook disaster, which he calls the greatest rebrand in his LinkedIn profile in NFL history, whatever. I'm not going to kill him for that. Again, I want to be clear on something. They had an impossible task, okay? After you don't – coming in and changing a brand that's been around for 80-plus years and trying to satisfy everybody, it's impossible. I just think that they butchered it so many different ways as they butchered everything else. Yeah, I mean, the patient's going to live once Dan's gone. And whether or not, you know, it comes back to full life and is healthier than before will, you know, be contingent on all of the other moves that the new owner makes. But Sean Payton on March 28th with the new owner in place, that would... you're going to sell.
That would do it.
Yeah, and then all but Aaron Rodgers is still out there as a possibility. Yeah, Justin Fields is still a possibility before the draft because the Bears want to trade Justin Fields and draft Bryce Young. A lot of possibilities exist
out there. I'm all for Tom Brady actually coming here for a year. Fine.
Yeah,
year to year with Brady at this point.
Yeah, but Rodgers makes him an absolute contender. I think Brady certainly makes him. Obviously, Brady's going to be an upgrade over what they've had, but man, he's much closer to falling off the cliff than Rodgers is. All right, I want to finish up the show with more Washington quarterback discussion and a quick preview of Terps, Indiana. I think really at this point, the biggest game of the year for Maryland tonight at Xfinity against 21st-ranked Indiana. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Tommy, tell us about our good friends at Shelley's Backroom.
Well, if you're a loyal listener to the podcast and going back to our days with the Sports Fix, you know the concept of the menu of excellence, okay? It's what we try to present to you every single day. a menu of excellence. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody tries. That's our goal. That's what we have in common with Shelley's Back Room. So Shelley's Back Room has menus of excellence, not just one, but several menus of excellence. The Great Cigar Bar in D.C. at 1331 F Street Northwest in the district. They have a menu of excellence when it comes to food. They have a menu of excellence when it comes to drinks. And in particular, since they're in the cigar business, they have an absolute menu of excellence when it comes to cigar selections that you can walk in and say, fix me up with something I'm looking for right here. Check out this collection. It's from the Opus X. Listen to the name of this collection, the God of Fire Lost City Collection. You listen to these cigars, the God of Fire Churchill. You know, I mean, who wouldn't want to smoke a cigar named God of Fire? Okay, that's just a small list. They have Davidoffs, they have Romeo and Julietta's, they have all kinds of different cigars. Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street Northwest.
You had said during the break that you wanted to mention something about Mobile, Alabama.
Well, I'm only 2 hours away
here
in Destin
from
Mobile. And we're going there this Saturday, not to watch the Senior Bowl, but we're going to a festival, the Spirit of Our Ancestors Festival that takes place there. There's a great documentary I'd recommend to everybody called Descendant. It's about the search for America's last known slave ship. It was called the Clotilda, and it was found just outside of Mobile just a couple years
Why
ago.
Why are you pronouncing it Mobile? Is it Mobile or Mobile?
I always pronounce it Mobile.
I thought it was Mobile.
But I'm open to other interpretations. But I'm, I mean, we watched this documentary. We were fascinated with it. I recommend it to anyone, Descendant, about the search for the last slave ship. And this town called Africa Town, this small little part of Mobile, and what they've had to go through. And the key part for me is one of the community activists there is a guy named Cleon Jones. Cleon Jones was a left fielder for the New York Mets. He made the last catch on the 1969 World Series championship against the and hit 340 that year. He's one of the best hitters in the history of the Mets organization. And he lives in Mobile, and he's a community activist there. So I'm hoping to look him up and interview him and do a story about him while I'm there. So that's why I'm going to be in Mobile this Saturday, not for the Senior Bowl. If it's the Senior Bowl on Saturday?
The Senior Bowl is on Saturday,
right?
Correct.
Yeah, I won't be there for that.
Well,
apparently the Post has a couple of reporters down here, down there for it, but that's not where I'll be.
I think maybe your day will be much more interesting, actually. You know, I've been, I have not been because, you know, we haven't been reporters. You have been more than I, but I haven't been to Mobile for the Senior Bowl, but I've been to Mobile. You know, I've told you before that one of my best friends was in flight school down in Pensacola when we were much younger. And so we went down to Pensacola a few times, and then we would go into Mobile, and then we, of course, would eventually make our way on I-10 through the state of Mississippi into New Orleans get down to New Orleans on a lot of those trips as well.
Since you brought it up with the Senior Bowl, I thought I'd mention it.
Okay.
That's where I'll be
on Saturday.
You.
Thank you.
And I'm
going to
write it, hopefully meet Cleon Jones, one of my childhood heroes, and write a story about him.
That was part of the buffet menu dessert options. The Mobile conversation.
Yes. Yes, it was.
So I'm fascinated with all of the people that have pushed back on some of my conversation recently about Aaron Rodgers or Anthony Richardson at 16. He's not going to be there at 16, or trade up, or a trade up for Justin Fields if the Bears end up wanting to trade him. I'm just so fascinated by those that are absolutely sure that the right way to go is Sam Howell and building up around Sam Howell. And I didn't do a lot of work here because I've done this before, so it was kind of available to me. I just updated everything. But you have to just, if you look at history, The chances that a fifth-round quarterback ends up being your franchise quarterback, it's needle in haystack territory. It just is, people. I'm not telling you that, you know, Sam Howell can't be a nice quarterback and that I'm not intrigued with his physical abilities. You know, I mean, I was with him coming out of college. I wasn't the biggest fan of him coming out of college. I certainly am not convinced one way or the other after the game against the Cowboys. We only threw the ball 19 times. But of the 18 of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL were drafted in the last 10 years. If you look at the draft in the last 10 years, 18 of the starting quarterbacks came from the draft, 12 of those from the top half of the first round, and then 6 of those from the second round or earlier. Only Dak Prescott is below in the last 10 years, a quarterback that has started in the NFL that you would call a regular starting quarterback. And he went in the fourth round. Derek Carr in the second round, Geno Smith in the second round, and then Hurts in the second round. And then you've got Pickett right now and Lamar Jackson kind of late first round. All of the other guys that are starting came in the top half of the first round. And then as far as the other 14 teams, well, they're either in quarterback purgatory, quarterback hell, like Washington, which you could argue is one of the worst three or four situations in the NFL at quarterback, or they've got veteran quarterbacks that were at one time high draft choices, like Matt Stafford, who was the number one overall. Kirk Cousins was a fourth rounder. Tom Brady was a sixth rounder. We understand that. But we're talking about Dak Prescott, essentially the only guy in the last 10 years out of the draft that's turned into a regular starting quarterback after the second round. It's needle in haystack. I'm not counting Brock Purdy at this point. First of all, that injury may be so serious, it may have really limited his chances to be that guy. I just want the path to the next quarterback to be continuing to think big, continuing to swing big until you land on the quarterback that is a franchise quarterback. You know, if you want to say, well, I don't want to swing too big, but I'll give you, let's try second and third round guys. Okay, but for the most part, zero chance with those guys too. I mean, again, you got the Prescott and the Hurts, you know, situation. Geno Smith and Derek Carr. I mean, Derek Carr is a good quarterback, not necessarily a franchise quarterback where you're guaranteed double-digit wins for a long period of time. And it took Geno Smith 10 years, 9 years. You know, more often than not, what you get every year in the fifth round, if you want to go back 10 years in the draft, is you get Tom Savage. I'm talking about guys that have played. Garrett Gilbert, okay? You end up with Sean Mannion, who might still be in the league. Brett Hundley, Trevor Siemian. You know, these are the kind. Jacoby Brissett was a third rounder. He's still in the league. But almost everybody ends up out of the league after the fourth round. Everybody. People that you have never heard of. There are countless numbers of Brad Kayas, Chad Kellys, and Logan Woodsides and Alex McHughes. And Danny Etlings, okay, and Luke Falks. I mean, that's more likely than not what Sam Howell is. And I know that he came with a bigger billing, understood, and I talked about that because the year before, he was supposed to be a much higher draft choice. Jake Fromm was a fifth rounder in 2020. At one point when he was at Georgia, people were thinking maybe first rounder. Same thing with Jacob Eason at Washington. If he'd come out a year earlier, he may have been a second or a first rounder, not a fourth rounder. You know, it's not unusual for the Howell situation to develop where, well, Sheehan, if he had been taken a year earlier, he would have been a first round pick. Okay, but when he came out, everybody passed on him except for Washington when it got to the fifth round. So that's what he is. He's a fifth rounder. So, again, I'm not saying you're going to be wrong. He might be the needle in the haystack. But it would be a long shot if it turned out that Sam Howell was the answer, like the long-term answer at quarterback for Washington. So I would rather look at moving up to draft a quarterback if you really like quarterbacks, you know, being aggressive in the draft, being aggressive if an Aaron Rodgers is actually available. And I don't know what they're going to be, you know, allowed to do anyway because of the ownership situation. But I'm fascinated with those of you that believe, and I think Brock Purdy has something to do with it, and Jalen Hurts has something to do with it, where you're like, nope, stop doing that. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
It absolutely doesn't work. They've got the situation they need. Now let's just invest on building a really good team. And by the way, getting a really good coaching staff around Sam Howell. I think more likely than not, what you will end up being is what more teams that try to go that route end up being. And that is, you know, the teams like Denver and Buffalo before Josh Allen and the Jets before, you know, the Jets period, where you had some really good teams, but you didn't have a quarterback. Or you end up being a Houston with Brock Osweiler and Tom Savage and whomever else they had before Deshaun Watson winning, you know, 9 games but not doing anything in the postseason. I mean, best case maybe being a Tennessee with a really good coaching staff and a really good team and a really great player in Derrick Henry with just average to sub-average quarterback play, winning 10 games, 11 games, but not getting it done in the postseason. Like, maybe you can hope for that, but that's even a long shot. I just don't get it. I totally disagree.
I don't get it either.
With the not thinking big and continuing to swing big strategy, because that's what I would do.
Yes.
And you know, I'll just end on this, but if you have anything else, I want you to add to it. Like, the Justin Fields thing to me would be interesting. If he is available, because I could see Justin Fields, if you had to give up, let's just say you had to give up Daron Payne in a second rounder. I don't know what – I honestly don't know what the compensation for him would be. I'm just guessing. Or maybe you just give up number 16 overall and, you know, a player for Justin Fields. But I don't know if it's Daron Payne, because that's almost like giving up 2 first-rounders for Justin Fields, and I don't think that's what you have to give to move up to trade for Justin Fields. But Justin Fields could come in here with this team, and Washington, with the right coaches, could play like Philadelphia has with Jalen Hurts, because they're very similar. So that would be of interest to me. But nothing would interest me as much as the possibility of an Aaron Rodgers joining this team and turning this team into an instant contender overnight. But I don't think that's going to happen. I just, you know, I don't think that – I don't see that happening. I think he ends up in Green Bay or with the Jets. And I think Washington, by the way, will be limited to its solutions as well. And more likely than not, the solution that they'll have for next year, you know, unless the ownership thing cleans house and brings in Brady or does something like that, you'll probably get your wish, some of you, Sam Howell. Okay. Anything else on this?
I got nothing else for you today, boss.
Can I just tell you real quickly that Maryland plays Indiana tonight? Indiana's ranked 21st in the country. By the way, if you listen to my podcast through the end of the podcast yesterday, I predicted that Maryland would be favored tonight. I just had this gut instinct, that having bet on a lot of college basketball games over the years and followed this, that the home team against a ranked team was going to be favored. Maryland's a 3-point favorite tonight against 21st ranked Indiana, who's won 5 in a row with just incredible performances recently from their center, Trace Jackson Davis, who's a 6'9 senior, who in his last 5 games has gone 18-12, 35-9, 31-15, 25 points, 21 rebounds in their win over Minnesota, and then 18-10 against Ohio State. He's also got a game from earlier this year against Northwestern where he had 18 points and 24 rebounds. College game, 40 minutes. He's playing a lot of 40 minutes or 38, 39-minute games.
Yeah.
Maryland's favored over Indiana. This is a big spot for the Terps tonight. They have really played well in the last 2 weeks. They're the only team that's been close, really, with Purdue here recently. They had a chance to tie that game late. They blew out Nebraska. They blew out Wisconsin. But those two teams aren't very good. They're playing a really good team tonight, and I think it's going to be one of those crowds. The students are back. And it's going to be an opportunity for Maryland to get a signature resume win. They've got a couple already. Their win over Miami early in the year, Miami's been ranked much of the year, is going to be impressive. Their win over St. Louis actually could be impressive. But other than that, they don't really have a signature win. They need this one tonight because if they got to get to 500 with like one of these kinds of wins on their resume. And so tonight, I think the Terps take a major step towards being a tournament team in Kevin Willard's first season by beating Indiana at home and covering tonight the number. I'm not going to go, though. A lot of you reached out. Are you going to be there? Are you going to be really? At Bentley's before? Nope, I'm not going. It's a 9 o'clock start. That's, for me now, the 9 o'clock starts, even though I prefer them from a crowd standpoint because I think the crowd will be great. 9 o'clock starts Friday nights, Saturday nights, perfect. Tuesday nights with the rest of the week is harder. But, you know, I'll tell you what, if they were playing Purdue tonight, the number one team in the country, I would be there. And they play Purdue on February 16th. Purdue's clearly the best team in the league, maybe the best team in the country. And they'll have a number one in their building, I think, in a few weeks. So I'll probably be at that game. But go Terps tonight. I'm hoping that Kevin Willard and gang get it done. All right. Anything else that you want to add?
Not today, boss.
All right. I'm done as well. I am going to do that Super Bowl 17 recap with a lot of highlights. I'll either do it tomorrow or maybe Tommy and I will do it together on Thursday. Have a good day. Back tomorrow.